Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Warning. The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
This week it's all about you guys. We're going to do a Q&A and we've had a lot of stuff emailed into jen@rte.ie, and we're going to put it to our sex and relationship therapist. She is amazing. Her name is Rachel Cook with an E on the end. Rachel Cook with an E on the end. Good morning.
Good morning, Jen. What have you got for me?
We've so much to get through. Hopefully we'll get through it all. We'll do our very, very best. Okay, I'll kick off with the first one. It says, my partner and I have been together for 5 years and we've been having trouble in our relationship for about 6 months now. It feels like we're bored and ratty with each other a lot of the time. Could opening up our relationship make things feel new and exciting again? Question mark.
Oh, so it can be really tempting to think that when you're having relationship challenges, that opening it up can sort of alleviate the tension and solve some of the issues. However, opening up a relationship is rarely a cure-all. It rarely fixes, you know, unfulfilling or painful relationship dynamics. It's not to say don't ever do it, but that usually being in a rough place with each other is not the time to start, because it's, you know, if you're already in an insecure and fraught place with a partner, adding the challenge of changing the relationship structure is likely to increase that. Which is not to say that non-monogamous relationships are inherently less secure than monogamous ones, not at all. But the change itself can be very destabilizing and bring up a lot of stuff for people. So I would say, you know, it can feel a bit chicken or egg, but realistically, it's very important to be clear with yourself beforehand why you want to open up a relationship. And also, you know, remember that it's better to break up with someone than to drag out a relationship that you already know that you don't really want to be in anymore. So I would say to these people, probably, you know, really sit down together and talk about your issues, maybe go to therapy first before you decide to do anything about opening it up. And maybe when you're in a more secure place, you might still decide to do that. But that, you know, it's a bit like having a baby to save a relationship. Opening it up is unlikely to fix anything. So okay, try other things first.
Okay. Another one. Myself and my girlfriend have explored prostate massage, but are looking for advice on how best to find and locate it, what it should feel like for her to touch, and what sensations should I feel. Basically help in prostate exploration between us. It seems to be eluding us.
Oh, this is a great one. So the prostate, or pee spot as it's often called, is a small muscular gland that produces the seminal fluid that is found in ejaculate. It's also surrounded by nerve endings that can feel amazing when touched just right. And pee spot orgasms are said to feel similar to penis orgasms, but way more intense and felt throughout the entire body. The prostate is like a walnut, roughly walnut sized organ inside the rectum, and it's just under the bladder. It's located about 2 inches inside the rectum, between the rectum and the penis. And so although entering through the anus is the most direct way, you can also stimulate the prostate indirectly through the perineum, which is the patch of skin or flesh between the penis and the anus. Being aroused makes the prostate swell. So the more turned on you are before you poke around, the easier it'll be to feel. And it basically feels like a fleshy bulb of tissue on the front wall of the rectal lining as such. Now, actual clinical research on prostate orgasms is very lacking, so we don't really know how common it is or if it's possible for everyone with a prostate to have this type of orgasm. So the only people who have a prostate are those who were assigned male at birth. But basically, you know, if to be playing around, you know, I'd say start with doing it on the outside, sort of that perineum area, putting some pressure there with a couple of fingers, loads of communication. It really important before every step, you know, talk to your partner about what feels right for both of you, or what you can decide on things like how many fingers or which fingers might feel best to play around. You can agree on whether a firm touch or a lighter touch seems better to start with. And as you talk things through, you might discover that you feel comfortable enough to explore and see what feels right in the moment. And then when you're going to go, if you decide to go internal, you've got to use lube no matter what. There has to be lube. And so then you can start by gently inserting a lubricated finger into the anus, maybe rubbing around the area first, and then slowly pushing on the front wall of the rectum. And so, yeah, really, there, you know, you can sort of use these kind of consistent motions. A lot of people talk about using this kind of come hither motion with your finger. And also, yeah, it's good to bear in mind that prostate massages can make people feel like they have to pee. So the person having their prostate massage should probably empty their bladder beforehand. And the physical position might make things feel better. You know, it's not a guarantee, but some people find that being on top makes anal penetration easier. So you might want to be the person getting the massage might want to be on all fours rather than on their back. But realistically, chat through, experiment, you know, anything that feels really uncomfortable or painful, obviously stop. But that, you know, play around and I'm sure you'll have a great time.
Moving on. I found out, you've a lot to say on that one. I found out recently that my partner masturbates every day, even though we have sex almost every day. Should I be worried? Could it mean she's becoming less attracted to me? Should I have sex with her more in case I'm not satisfying her enough? Is it possible for her to masturbate too much?
Right, this person has a lot of questions. Now, it is a total myth that masturbating while you're in a relationship means that you're not sexually stimulated by your partner. It doesn't matter whether you're single, in a monogamous relationship or a non-monogamous relationship. Masturbation is a healthy, normal part of being a sexual being. Not everybody does it. You don't have to. But, you know, it is very much something that lots of people enjoy for loads of different reasons and is, you know, can be a very separate thing for many people to sex with a partner. Also, solo sex sessions can actually improve, not detract from the intimacy that you share with your partner. Masturbation can be self-soothing, relaxing. It also helps you learn about your body, specifically what turns you on, helping you know about how you like to be touched, which can mean that you're better at communicating that with your partner. So, you know, if the masturbation is like compulsive or it feels as though it's totally replacing sex with a partner, then it can be a concern worth discussing. But that someone masturbating does not say anything about whether they are less attracted to you or that there's a problem. But if you have concerns, I would say talk to your partner. Talk to them openly about your concerns. Don't accuse them or blame them. Just talk to them and see where you go from there.
Okay. I keep hearing that you need to love yourself before you can be in a healthy relationship. How do you know when you've done enough work on yourself?
Oh, this one, I really like this question, actually, because this is a very common sort of societal trope, I would say, that you have to love yourself before someone else can love you. And I think, you know, the question is quite helpful there because actually, you know, that nobody loves themselves absolutely all the time. Nobody feels completely accepting of themselves and free of shame. Almost nobody, I would say anyway. And so I think it's an actual myth that you need to be in a place where you're, you know, really, really good and secure in yourself in every way before you can have a relationship. Now, obviously, if you're absolutely full of, you know, self-loathing and shame and insecurity, it's going to be more difficult to, you know, kind of meet and attract a partner who is reasonably sort of like healthy and, you know, kind of emotionally healthy and able to engage with you and available to you. But that absolutely, that's not to say that you just have to kind of shut yourself away from romantic relationships and going on dates just because you're in a bit of a tough spot. So I would say, you know, there is no way to say when you've done enough work, but just being, you know, reflective and kind towards yourself and getting professional help if you find that that's really difficult for you, that, yeah, you could still absolutely go out and try and be as communicative as possible with your partners about what you need and what you want. And off you go.
Jen, can you and Rachel please help me? I don't know if I can help on this, but Rachel might be able to. My boyfriend says he can't find my clit because it's so small. Could there be something wrong with me? I would say maybe he needs glasses. What do you say, Rachel?
He might need glasses.
Yeah.
There's more to the clit than meets the eye. The external nub or bean, you know, that's called the glands. That's just one small part of the greater clitoral network, most of which is actually internal. Most people don't know that the clitoris goes beyond that little nubbin at the top of the vulva, but extends back into the labia and the abdomen. It can be up to 5 inches long in some women, which is roughly the average size of a penis. But obviously most of that is internal. So some people have more of their clitoris exposed externally, and for some people it's more to do with the skin around that, the clitoral hood, which can make it seem more obvious. But I would say you might want to, you know, give him some directions there and give him a magnifying glass.
It's
and
there.
Help him out.
Oh,
help
it's there. I'd like to try anal sex, but I'm worried my girlfriend will be freaked out or think I'm filthy. Should I keep my mouth shut or spill the beans?
You know, I think talking about anal sex is like talking about any other sexual act. Treat it, you know, if you treat it like it's something else, you can really sort of instill or reinforce the idea that bum stuff is like taboo or shameful, and, you know, that it's a scary thing. You know, so I think starting with the basics, you know, just sort of asking the person, like, what are your thoughts on anal sex? Or maybe something like, I was wondering how you feel about spicing things up a bit and trying some bum stuff. How do you feel about bum play? You know, from there, you can kind of register each other's interest levels and talk about it in more detail. You know, really, this is about whatever works best for you and your partner. So, you know, discussing that you might feel some shame or have some reservations about it or worries about, you know, the hygiene aspect of it or pain or whatever. But that, you know, there's absolutely no problem asking someone what their interest is. It doesn't mean that you're saying you're going to break up with them unless they do it, or that you're obsessed with this thing. But that, you know, I think it is, you know, great for people to be communicating about their, you know, interests and desires.
Okay. I'm a man and I sometimes fantasize about receiving anal sex. Could this mean I'm gay?
Woo! We have loads of bum stuff today.
Loads of anal today.
Okay. How many complaints are we going to get?
So many.
Right. So people of any sexual orientation, gay, straight, bi, pan, whatever, can enjoy the sensations of anal play or any sex act for that matter without it meaning that they need to rethink their sexual identity. Sexual behaviour does not inform your sexual identity. The origin of this myth comes from the idea that behavior is identity. So I think it's really important for people to realize that these are not the same thing. How you identify, i.e. your sexual identity, is personal for you and is, you know, what feels good for you, you know, emotionally and to your body. And so, you know, realistically, you know, being interested in a sex act has nothing to do with your sexual orientation. Now, they can be connected. You might find, now, again, we've talked many times before, Jen, that just because someone fantasizes about something doesn't mean that they actually want to do that in real life, and also doesn't have to mean if you're a man who fantasizes about sex with other men, that doesn't necessarily make you gay or bi, but it also could do. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with being gay or bi. So I would say, you know, allow yourself to explore, enjoy, and see where you go.
Okay, Rachel Cook, thank you so much for that. I'll chat to you next week. We're going to feel a lot of anal today, Rachel, a lot of anal, but you did get the little bit.
I can tell, Jen, you're tuckered out.
No, I'm not. I did, out of the squirting conversation, I absolutely escaped that one. But I have to ask you before you go, because you talk about it so often, lube of choice?
Do you know what? I'm going to say coconut oil. I'm a big fan of the old coconut oil, but it doesn't work for everyone. Some people are slightly sensitive to it and find that it makes them feel a little bit sort of itchy around their skin afterwards. But personally, love it.
Lovely. Thanks for that, Rachel. See you later. Bye. That is Rachel Cook, our mental health consultant, sex and relationship therapist. Always has the good advice. Coconut oil, eh?
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.